You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
What is happening?
It's all I don't know.
You're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Hey everybody, it's Saturday night and you're listening to the AME Radio Show, the show that is the voice of artists and entertainers everywhere. I'm your host, Jason Dowd. We got a great show for you guys tonight. So what we're going to be doing before we get into anything is checking out the website, www.theamemagazine.com. While you're there, you'll be able to see all of our past interviews, get links to our social media networks, download our apps on our Apple or Android platforms, and sign up for our newsletter. So go do that when you get the chance. Now, coming up in October, we have some top celebrities coming in here talking about their Halloween experiences, any ghost stories that they may have, or ghost experiences. We're going to be learning about some of the shows that they've been in or movies that they've been in with that are horror-related and so much more. You guys are going to really love this, so tune in each week throughout the month of October for that. Okay, so our guest today is Kathy Searle. She is an actress on different TV and movies. And she's also been seen in Baby Mama, and we're going to be talking to her about the numerous things that she has coming out right now. It's a very fun interview. I think you guys are going to really enjoy that. Then we have actor Hans Christopher coming on. He was in a six-part miniseries with, called Waco, and he's also on a lot of different other movies and television shows that are coming up, and we're going to be talking to him about all of those. So you guys are going to want to stay tuned and see what we have coming up here in just a little bit. But before we get into anything to our interviews, I want to go back to 1983, and we're going to be playing right now a song called Girls Just Want to Have Fun by Cyndi Lauper. And this song has a profound impact on the professional wrestling circuit, and I'm going to tell you what that is after we listen. So go enjoy the song. We'll be right back after.
Yeah.
All right, that was Cyndi Lauper's iconic 1980s hit, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Now, this had a profound impact on wrestling, and I found this by going through YouTube. So let me kind of give you the backstory behind it. The WWF wanted to capitalize on the story, and they decided to have use Captain Albano's sexism to upset Cyndi Lauper, and they would go back and fight back and forth. Well, they decided to end it all in a wrestling match, and each one of them got to represent, pick a wrestler to represent them in the ring, and they would wrestle. Captain Lou Albano chose the WWF Women's Heavyweight Champion, the Fabulous Moolah, and Cyndi Lauper managed the challenger, Wendi Richter. And in the end, Wendi Richter beat the Fabulous Moolah, ending a 25-year reign as the WWE's heavyweight women's champion. And it was an upset of epic proportions for a lot of the wrestlers. Nobody could really believe it. But that didn't end it right there. Then Cyndi Lauper kind of got mixed up with Hulk Hogan, and Piper and Lou Albano got together, and they decided to do the war to settle the score. And this is where Roddy Piper challenged Hulk Hogan for the WWF Heavyweight Championship, and they went on an epic brawl in this ring. I've never seen such a I have seen some pretty intense matches, but back then, this was really one of the most intense matches that I've seen Hulk Hogan in. And it ended up with Hulk Hogan winning by countout, because Roddy Piper was counted out. Now, there's a story behind that, too. Roddy Piper refused to lose to Hulk Hogan, because he didn't like that he got all the credit and all the glory. So he would lose to him, but he would not be pinned by Hulk Hogan. Fun little insight into that, huh? Okay, so that's where it is. If you want to go check it out, it's the brawl to settle the score and the war to end it all. I think that's what it was called. It is the war to settle the score, I'm sorry, and the brawl to end it all. That's what it is. Go check it out on YouTube. You'll be able to see all the backstories to this, the fighting between Cyndi Lauper and Lou Albano, Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper, and more. You're going to love it. We have Kathy Searle on the line. We're going to be talking to her about everything that she's got going on and more. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Gladdy, the dachshund, the face of Gladdy's Goodies. Are you worried about your pet's health? My parents were too, especially since I developed pancreatitis. They couldn't find any treats I could eat, so they made some. Our natural treats are healthy for all dogs, with and without health issues. We have lots of delicious flavors like chicken, turkey, salmon, sweet potato, beef, and more. With our homemade treats, you won't worry about the contents because they have no chemicals, fillers, or bad ingredients. Go to GladdysGoodies.com now to get your fur friend a bag. And pick them up some swag while you're there. You'll be glad you did. Remember, we have the treats and swag to make their tails wag. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com.
Hey everyone, it's Lulu Ambrose from Stuck in the Middle, and you are listening to AME Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have on the line with us our special guest. Her name is Kathy Searle. She is an actress on TV, movies, theater, and she's a comedian. You've seen her on Baby Mama and a ton of other movies. She sent me this list today, guys, and I swear to God, it's probably, there's got to be at least 40 things on there. So she's been really busy doing what she loves to do, and we're excited to talk to her about that. So welcome to the show, Kathy. How are you doing today?
I'm amazing. I'm so happy to be talking to you. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. So, like I said, you've been doing a lot of stuff, and that's good stuff, right? I mean, it's good to be working, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a way better person when I'm working. I feel like I'm way more balanced, you know.
That's good. And see, like with me, I'm always stuck behind these cubicles that it's like, it drives me nuts. But, you know, it is nice to be able to work. But I really wish I could have something where I could just get out and just enjoy myself. I mean, I love doing the radio show. I mean, the radio show is like my own type of thing that I do on the side. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I just love to get out there and try things. And you know, actually, I've kind of wanted to be an actor myself my whole life. And I'm glad that you are able to do what you love to do.
I know. I'm very, you know what, it's funny that you're saying that, because I met someone yesterday who was saying how fortunate I am that I do get to do what I love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are stuck in jobs that, you know, they want to be creative. And I've been so fortunate that I have been a working actor for, I would say, 10 years where I haven't had a side job, which has been amazing.
That is. And, you know, you got to come up to that point to where you find something that you want to do. And sometimes we dabble stuff. We go to college, and usually the people go to college, they never get the job that they want when they get out. And they go into something completely different. I'm guilty of that. So when did you decide you wanted to be an actress?
My mom will tell you when I came out of the womb. I pretty much was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. You know what? It's funny. I professionally, like, I think as a kid, because my parents were very supportive and they knew that this was something I wanted to do from a very young age, I would say even like 5 years old, mm-hmm. I grew up in New Rochelle in Westchester. So I was able to go see Broadway and watch TV and movies, and I was so inspired, especially by the Not Ready for Primetime Players, Saturday Night Live. My parents had old VHS tapes. And that's really when I started desperately wanting to do this, watching Chevy Chase do pratfalls and Gilda Radner. And so I feel like my training was from these incredible comedians. And I knew that sound, that laughter, that's something I wanted to do and make people feel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, you got a good training, because those guys are live. And a lot of people don't understand that, because they make it look like it's so easy. They cannot take back something when they're doing that, you know? So, I mean, when you learn stuff like that, you're learning from the best. And, you know, there are iconic people that have been on that show.
Yeah, they really have. And I feel like they've all been inspiring over the years and have been such a part of my upbringing, from studying at Upright Citizens Brigade when I got out of college, and it's UCB and all of the comedic schools, the Pitt, Second City, all of them have really shaped me. Not just as a person, because I feel it's important to have improv skills in life, but especially as an actor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my transition into wanting to be on television was not as cool as yours. Mine was that, you know, when we watched those old television shows back in the day, it didn't matter where you went in the room, the eyes followed you, and that freaked me out. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to freak people out.
I love that.
So that's how I got. Like, I got to be in that box. I just don't know how. And that's what made me get interested in the whole industry myself. And I never did get in the box. So, I mean, one of these days.
Well, not yet. I will say, I feel like our industry is very cool right now, because, you know, it's with especially the streaming networks. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter age, type, physical, being, all of it. It's just sort of like there's lots of new and exciting things happening. So that's always feel like if you want to pursue it, I say go for it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I just, yeah, I'm a firm believer in you should give it a shot if you want to, and the universe will let you know.
It will.
If you're a believer in the universe will let you know.
Well, you know, I got my start as an in the arts with doing photography and stuff like that. I love doing what I do, and I know that in the arts, it's a tough field. It's cutthroat sometimes, and it looks like it's so glamorous on the outside, but the behind the scenes can really be rough on a person. How did you deal with coming into this and realizing that it's not as easy as everybody makes it look like? You know, you just show up to a audition, you get hired, everything's just fine, you get make millions of bucks, you can win Emmys, you win Grammys, you win all this other kind of stuff. You know, it doesn't just work like that. So, you know, you get a lot of no's, you get a lot of yeses. How did you manage that?
You know what's funny? I feel like that's a work in progress, getting no's and yeses. It's an everyday sort of battle that we as actors have. I think the most important thing is knowing that it's not personal. Things come down to height, you know, hair color, things that sometimes we do have control over and yet we really don't, because if they don't see it right in that moment, we can't necessarily change their mind. Sometimes we can, but you have to develop that thick skin of, it's not about me as a person. And I think that's every day you sort of have to get up and say that, because we're told no every day pretty much in the industry. And when we get the yes, it's like the cherry on top of the sundae. And when we get the no's, it's sort of like, okay, you know what? I just don't fit in their museum, and their museum can be a play or a TV show or a movie. So that's okay. My painting, a.k.a. me, will be in somebody else's museum.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And, you know, that's the great part about being in the arts. It does develop a new side to you that you didn't realize you had before. And you've got to take a lot of criticism,
yeah,
too. Because, I mean, every time you get on screen, you're opening yourself up. Somebody's going to like you, somebody's not going to like you. And that's just the way it is.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure
they let you know online.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you've probably seen those things where people get up there and they talk about all the comments that they get from Twitter. I mean, some of those are hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I'm sitting there saying to myself, most people would be in the corner sitting there rocking back and forth after reading some of those. I mean.
Oh, I know. I know.
But how do you drown that out? Because, I mean, sometimes it's good to listen to criticism, but sometimes you can't let it overindulge you either.
Yes, yeah. I think it's important to have constructive criticism. I think everybody is entitled to their opinion, and not everybody is going to like the work that you do. I think you just have to remember to tell the story, and we are storytellers, and if we do that, then we've done our job. Also, if people hate it or they love it, then we've done something, because we have affected them in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the hate, you know what, it's okay. I got a horrible piece of, like, hate email about a film that I did, and I laughed so hard at the things that this man was talking about, and it was really just my physical appearance, and I thought, wow, I can't believe that I really offended him with my red hair, and it was just so silly and ridiculous, but I thought, he took the time to write this email, so I just simply wrote, thanks.
And that probably set him off, too.
Yeah, just a little thank you. Glad that you're crazy.
But see, when people start to pick on other people's looks, I tend to want to see what they look like themselves.
Oh, I know. It's all insecurity. We're all hiding behind something, you know?
That's right.
Whether it's a computer or a mask of sorts.
So, you know, you've been into some really amazing titles here. Tell the people some of the titles that you've been into that you've really, you know, found yourself in, and what made them so special.
You know, I would say one of my first TV experiences when I had gotten out of college was a show called Hope and Faith with Ted McGinley, Faith Ford, Kelly Ripa, and it was one of the most incredible experiences. They took me under their wing. It was a multi-camera sitcom, and they made me feel a part of the show. And I really learned a lot from that, because I watched them with everyone, from the caterer to the grip to the boom operator. They knew everyone's name. They were kind to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought, yeah, that's the way it should be done. So for me, that was just like a turning point of, that's the kind of actor I want to be. I want to be generous to everyone on set, and I want to be generous to my fellow actor when, you know, there's something called turnaround, when they're doing coverage on the other person, and sometimes big celebrities will walk away and have a PA read lines with them, but these generous, lovely actors stayed, and they were always there for my eye line and all of that, and it matters. Those little things can help make your performance 100 times better.
Mm-hmm.
So I really learned a lot from those actors and how to behave on sets too, which I'm so, so very grateful for. And I still am that person where, you know, I want to know everybody's name and what they do, and to have it be a fun set, even if it's a drama, have fun.
Sure. And you know, you've been on Law and Order. I love that show. And Law and Order, Criminal Intent. You know the thing, da-dung, you know that everybody knows. Everybody knows that sound. So what was it like to be on a show like that? Because I mean, it's powerful. I mean, no matter what happens, it's based on kind of realistic stories, I think.
Yes. Yeah. They're all kind of ripped from the headlines. I was actually on the last season of Law and Order, And it was such a well-oiled machine. Dick Wolf and his team really were ingenious the way the show worked, and it worked so effortlessly and smoothly. And once again, you were welcomed in. When you're guest star, you know, sometimes it's hi, goodbye. You know, you do your work and then you leave. You're there for a couple days. But this cast, they were just so kind and sweet, and it was fun, but it moved very quickly because they know what works, what they like, and they go in knowing that, and so the day runs very tight and smooth.
Mm. I could see where that would be like that, because you can see the how well the finished product comes out.
Yeah, yeah, it's so, I mean, he's great, and that's why he's Dick Wolf, and I feel like every show he has is so successful because he really knows how to do procedurals and make them interesting every week, where you're not bored and you're interested in all of the characters, whether it be series regular to guest star, co-star, etc. So I really credit his team and his writing staff as well.
And I saw that
was a fun one.
And I saw you were on a film called My Man is a Loser. That stands out. It's like, bam, what could this guy do?
I know. What a title, right?
Right.
Like, our merch, when they were thanking us for working on the film, were hats that said, My Man is a Loser, and little tote bags. And I found that when I would walk around the city, people would look at me like I was insane. And then I realized, oh, right, it's saying my man is a loser, and they have no context of where that's coming from. That is still, to this date, one of my favorite movie experiences, because I had the great fortune of playing Michael Rapaport's wife. Mm. And that was just, he was like an actor on my bucket list of who I wanted to work with. True Romance is a film that I was so inspired by, and I've watched this man's career. I also loved his documentary about Tribe Called Quest. I just loved how he was so diverse as an actor and a director and a documentarian. So to play his wife, I was terrified because I don't know anything about sports, and I know he's a big sports fan. So I did as much research as I could. We had a little welcome dinner for the cast, and John Stamos was in the movie, and Brian Callen, and I'd done all this research on the Yankees. I happen to be a Mets fan. But I did a lot of research on the Yankees, but it wasn't baseball season yet. It was basketball season. So
oh, my goodness.
My conversations were falling flat in the beginning, and I thought, oh, no, he's going to hate me. But we ended up walking for, I think it was like 65 blocks after the dinner, and just talking about his life, his kids, his family. It just was so great, and I thought, oh man, I'm going to be very lucky to work with him. And we worked really seamlessly together, and that whole film, you know, doing a rom-com was one of my dreams because that's what I grew up watching.
Sure.
So to be the wife of the lead male, and they weren't that bad. They did turn around. They, you know, they became good husbands again, which was good, which is what we want in a romantic comedy. They're bad, and then they're good.
Right. Well, that's cool that you got to work with John Stamos too, because I've followed his career a long time. Even before he was in the Full House, you know, because I'm a big Beach Boy fan, and
me too.
And I love watching him on stage play those drums. I mean, that's why people don't realize that that's why the Beach Boys were on the show so much, not just because he was in California. You know,
I know, and you know what? He would sing a lot on set. He had a guitar and he would play for us. And actually, my first or second day of filming, it was one of the last scenes of the movie, and he was performing. And I remember this surreal moment of looking at him and then holding Michael Rapaport's hand, and I thought, oh my God, Uncle Jesse is serenading Michael Rapaport and I. Like, what's happening in my life right now? Like, it was a very surreal actor meets Kathy moment.
That's cool. And you know what? It took me a long time, but I finally found the song Forever that he actually sang with the Beach Boys. That is the hardest Beach Boys song to find. It really is.
Was it really?
It really was. I have every Beach Boys song ever made. That one took me years to find because it's not on a CD. It is now on a CD after I found it, of course, but gotta
love
it.
That. Of course, after you had done all the work, then they're like, you know what? We're going to release this to everyone.
Yes. So you are in a couple of new comedies that are, I think they're romantic comedies, if I'm not mistaken. Love and Killarney, and there's another one.
Yeah, Love and Killarney, yeah.
And there's another one, Eight Slices, and the Western.
Yeah, oh my God, okay, yeah. I did a Western, which anybody that meets me would think, no, that will never happen in your career. But I can tick that off my list as well. It was awesome. I got to shoot guns, and I was in West Virginia and just transported into this little town that they made look like an old-timey 1915 Western. And it was crazy, and I was working with Lana Wood, Natalie Wood's sister, mm-hmm. also the first Bond girl, which was amazing. And Darby Hinton and Robert Carradine, just amazing characters, and we're in West Virginia, so, you know, there's a couple restaurants like Hillbilly Heaven, shout out to Hillbilly Heaven, because they do have some good burgers there, but it was just fun. It was like, it was a very different role for me, so I had a lot of, I was very nervous going into it, and then once I was on set, and I put that wig on, and the costume, and I was sort of thrown into this very different time period, everything changed. You know, sarcasm didn't really exist back then. There was a different energy, and it's amazing how when you're thrown into the actual costumes and sets, everything falls into place, and I was very, very lucky for that. And I think it's, I want to say it's coming out sometime in 2019. Love and Killarney was a sweet rom-com that I did in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And I also think that's coming out in 2019, and I play a little shop owner who, of course, is in love with the sheriff, and he doesn't acknowledge my existence because, you know, it's a rom-com, so right. You need that. But then eventually he falls in love with me. I'm giving it all away, but, you know, it's a romantic comedy, so we hope that that happens.
Well, yeah, because usually in those romantic comedies, they always do come around and fall in love with each other. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen one where they haven't.
Yeah, it's sad when they don't. Yeah. I've seen a couple, but they consider them more dramedies. And that's actually what Eight Slices was. That was we shot that in North Carolina, Holden Beach, North Carolina. If you've ever been, mm-hmm. go. Go. It's such a beautiful beach, sleepy kind of town, and Petroni's Pizza is where we filmed, and I feel like we ate pizza every day. We were begging them, just keep making us pizza. It was the most delicious pizza, and I'm a New Yorker, but they know how to make some good pizza. The owners actually were from Brooklyn.
Okay.
So I said, okay, you've got the New York edge.
Well,
but it is a dramedy, and that was really nice to kind of play into the vulnerability of myself and the character.
Well, those sound like some really cool movies and stuff like that. Do you have any idea of like where people can see some of the work that you have done already, or if they want to follow you and see what you got coming up?
Yes, please. I'm on Instagram, and you can follow me at Kathy Searle, and I'm on Twitter, same thing, at Kathy Searle, and of course, My Man Is a Loser is still available on Bill Tillman and the Outlaws, Love and Killarney, Empathy, Inc., and Eight Slices are all coming out in 2019, so God willing, 2019 will be a good year. I think some of those will be available on Amazon. You can also check me out on an amazing series I did called Red Oaks, which is on Amazon still.
Well, I can't wait to see these myself, and, you know, I cannot let you go without first asking a cool question, because we are in Halloween, you know, the Halloween mode. We're in October. You're from New York. I know that there's a lot of cool stuff up there. What was one of your favorite Halloween experiences, and did you ever actually have a ghost experience? Because I know it's haunted up in that area.
Ooh, I love that. Well, when I was growing up, we lived next door to an old barn, and they actually turned it into a haunted house every year. So when I was a kid, I would work at this haunted house, and I loved it from, like, I think age 5 to 11. And then once I was a teenager, they would let me sort of be the characters. So I remember playing Chucky one year and scaring people. But I don't like scary movies. That's the funny thing. I hate being scared myself. So it was kind of ironic that I was scaring other people. I mean, I feel like I've felt spirits. Mm-hmm. But I've never really, like, looked into it. I've always wanted to.
you know, like have a medium come to my apartment and say, like, yes, there's a spirit that lives here from 1810 or something cool like that.
Well, you know, I had some great experiences when I was a child with ghosts and stuff like that. I mean, at the time it was horrifying, but now I look back and I'm like, this is so cool. And
I know, right?
Because I was born and raised in Bristol, Connecticut, and you know some of the
I love Bristol. It's beautiful.
It is, and you know some of the old cemeteries that are up there are just absolutely horrifying. And you go through there, you see like these old pictures on the cemetery stones, and I mean it just chills you to the bone. And the funny thing was, is we went to the Green Lady Cemetery up in Burlington, which is originally where my parents lived for about a year after I was born. Then we moved to Southington, and then we moved to Bristol. So we were kind of all in those areas. But this cemetery was built in like the 1700s when the wife of the husband died and was buried on their own property. Very common back then. And then it became like it became a cemetery. Now, when she was buried or died, when he died, he was supposedly the person that killed her, but they never could prove it. He was buried next to her, and the entire grass over where she was buried never grew, and
it just stopped.
And then this green mist would come out, form an old a woman, and then she would just walk around really really distraught and then disappear. And supposedly, if you had gone in there with like, if you went on a date and you went in there with your wife or something like that, she would possess your wife and just rip the man apart. It got to the point where they actually had to close the cemetery because so many bad things were happening at this place. And it was really cool because I went up there like 1 o'clock in the morning with me and my wife, because we do a lot of paranormal investigating too. And I'm walking through this place and the cemetery stones are just, you know, sitting over there. They're all crooked. They're 1700s, early 1800s. And this mist is just floating like right up in the middle of the stones, just, you know, blinking them almost. It was the coolest thing. And she goes, are you afraid to go in there? And you know, because you know it's haunted. I said, no, I'm not afraid of the ghost. I'm more afraid of the bears in the woods.
And rightfully so, because they will actually kill you.
Yes. And the funny thing is, that's all it took for her not to go in that place.
Well played. Well played.
But not this guy. I'm the dumb one running around there and just going to have some fun. So, you know.
Oh, I love that you guys do that. That's so awesome.
Yeah. Well, Kathy, we are just about out of time. Again, you have any websites or anything like that you want to promote before we go?
Oh, yeah. You can check me out, www.kathycerrell.com.
And Kathy, this has been so much fun. I had a great time with you, and this is
a good
ending to the show, so we could get in our Halloween, you know, haunt fest, and I love that. And hopefully we'll be able to get you back on in the future to have some more fun talking about some of the cool things that you got coming out in the future.
I would love that.
All right, guys, we are out of time. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. I promise you, you're going to love what we have when you come back, so don't go anywhere.
Do you love horror? The strange and unusual, fantasy creatures or urban legends? Do you want to step inside a dream or nightmare? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out internationally exhibiting artist Jason Dowd and his award-winning photographic collections by visiting www.imaginationartstudios.com. Get inside his mind and experience his inner weird.
Hey guys, it's Julie Mae Silverstein from Lydia Unfunked, and you're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have our first guest on the line today. His name is Hans Christopher, and he is an actor that has been seen in Ruby Ridge Standoff. He's also played John Baker in Dreamland, And when he's not acting and doing the stuff that he loves to do and make and entertain us, he loves to do skateboarding, poetry, and activism. So we got a lot of stuff to talk to him about today, and I'm really excited for the opportunity. So welcome, Hans, to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm very good, very good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. So I guess let's kind of start off by getting to know you a little bit more. Let's see how you got started in the business. When did it start? What kind of things brought you to it, and what do you love the most about it?
Sure. You know, it's kind of funny. I got started a little later in life. I started out as a bio major, grew up in Northern California. And looking back at it, I got to say there was probably one moment, or at the time I didn't know, but I got up to read this poem in front of my English class, and I was nervous, completely terrified of public speaking at the time. Mm-hmm. And I got up and I read this poem. And it was like something just happened. I finished reading the poem, and I look up, and everybody was just completely silent. And I think it was the first time that I'd ever actually told a story or someone else's story and gave it meaning and made other people feel. Mm-hmm. And it probably 5, 6, 7 years later wasn't until I realized that that was the first time that I had it. And something about that, I think, kind of got in my veins and started me on this path of wanting to tell stories and wanting to do this. So that's kind of where I got started. I then met a girl, my girlfriend at the time, when I was going out for biology, and it was a pre-med actually, was an actress. And I would read with her and go over her lines, and I just thought it was unbelievable. I thought it was so incredibly courageous, and at the same time, just crazy that she could do these different things and be a part of this. So that's kind of where I got my entrance, and then I jumped all in about, I'd say, 11 years ago, and I kind of haven't looked back since.
Wow. So basically it kind of started off with just a reading and just the passion of reading something artistic that probably got you into this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So at the same time, too, I was I'd just gotten into Deadwood. And so I would be reading all these things with her, and then I started watching Deadwood, and it just ignited me, man. There was something about it that just made me say, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so it was a scary decision. And I'd love to say that I completely jumped in, but I kind of I put my toe in the water a little bit, and I was like, well, I'll try this out. I'll go to a class. I'll do this. And then finally I just said, you got to do this or don't. So,
yeah. And, you know, that sometimes that's the hardest thing to do, especially when you have something that's just, you know, it's concrete. You know exactly where it's going to go. You kind of know how it's going to be. And then when you jump ship to do something that's completely sporadic and fun and with no idea of how it's going to go, that is very daunting. And a lot of people can't get off that ship to try it.
I know. It's something that, especially here in America with our mentality of having to always be working, always be making money, always be reaching for that next step or that next goal. But the thing that's crazy about it is there is no job that's really completely secure here, you know. And it's, I think we have this idea of the 9-to-5 or this idea of going to college and then doing the things that you're supposed to do as like, well, if I do that, I'll be secure, I'll be safe. Mm-hmm. And I think especially in the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, we're starting to find that there is no 100% safe path, and I'm not saying that acting is something that's safe, but it just, for me, I kind of got to this point where if I'm not going to be, I got lucky because early on I was a student assistant of an assistant at a big government retirement company. And it showed me really my first job, and it showed me immediately that I did not want to be working mm-hmm. in cubicles and in that kind of an environment. So it's tough, man. It's tough, but you got to do it in anything in life, and you have to completely give yourself over to it and jump in 100%, or you're not going to be able to get what you want.
Well, you know, I think you just said the key word there is, you know, you put in what you put into it 100%, because anything that you do, I truly believe if you put 100% of yourself behind that, no matter what it is, it will be successful for you.
Absolutely. And I think in the process too, you know, it may not come out exactly what you envisioned at the beginning. But in the process of you giving everything you had, you will discover things that take you down the road that will lead you to where you want to, where eventually you'll get what you need to get out of. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the only way you can't succeed is by not trying. You know,
that is right.
It's the only guaranteed way that you're not going to do it.
Now tell me a little bit about your first couple of auditions and stuff like that. I know as an artist, you know, there's a lot of rejection, but there's also a lot of, you know, people taking you in and you know, just giving into what you do and liking what you do and hire you to do it. And sometimes those no's can be very daunting, especially for an artist or an entertainer, because, you know, when you put yourself out there, you're literally putting your entire self out there. And sometimes people take the no as a attack on themselves. And that's not necessarily the case. So what was it like for your first no? Did it intimidate you a little bit? Did you use it as motivation? And what's your experience with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is one of the scariest things. One of the scariest things you have to face, especially facing it over and over and over. And it's unbelievable being here this long now to see how many talented actors, people that I know that are immensely more talented than I am, incredibly open and vulnerable, and who are completely paralyzed by this fear of rejection. One no will cripple them. And for me, I don't really know what it is, but I've always had this. I think I get it from my dad. There's always been this thing in me that when I do get knocked down, I almost get like a little angry.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes me to wake up the next day and just work harder. I have a little section I have in my phone called Lessons Learned. So I try to make every experience, no matter how bad, how great, an opportunity to what can I get from it? What's the lesson learned out of this? You know, mm-hmm. What can I remember for next time? Whether it's going and shooting a show or going to a little audition, that, you know, even when I was doing smaller stuff, it's like student films and things like that, to be able to go in the experience and say, what can I get out of it, ultimately takes that no and turns it into something you can learn from, right? And not only that, it's something that there's, even getting a no, there's still small wins that you can go for. You know, sometimes you're not right looks wise. Sometimes you know, they go with something else. They cut the part. You have no idea. So all you can do is go in and do your best and try and tell the story. And it's easier said than done, because sometimes you go into those rooms and it's, you know, absolutely daunting, especially when you're sitting in front of, you know, a big casting director, or you're working opposite somebody and they're in the room. But if you can make that story the most important thing, if you can really allow that to kind of fill what you're thinking and what you're doing, you'll find over time it gets much easier. And that's one of the things. I talked to a guy when I went and was shooting in Dreamland. He told me he just went to his first audition and how scared he was about it. And it got me thinking how many auditions I've now been on to get to the place where I am now. And it's not that I'm not scared. It's not that I'm not nervous going into it. But it's the repetition of facing that, doing it, getting over it, getting up the next day, surviving it, and going on, doing it again and again and again. So...
yeah. So with the acting part, you know, there's so many facets to it, and you're essentially a storyteller. What do you love the most about being an actor? What drives it for you? Is it playing different characters? Is it getting to do, go to cool places, tell stories? What do you love the most about it?
Yeah, there's so many great things. I think the thing that clicks with me the most is the ability to learn and discover things that I never knew before, you know. For instance, just with Waco and learning about Ruby Ridge and Randy Weaver and that whole, what actually happened, you have to dive so deep into things that you really begin to empathize and understand a point of view that you would have never, ever had the opportunity to do. You would have glanced over it and never taken the time to look at it. So... in a way, it kind of automatically turns you into an activist, because these stories tell a lot of these things that are happening in the real world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in that, you get to discover and learn and be absorbed with absolutely fascinating things from around the world, stories, you know, from everywhere. And it's just, for me, that's the greatest thing, because in doing that and in getting so involved in a story, you come out of it and that stays with you forever. You know, that it's almost like you build a small part of yourself in, and now you get to move on to the next thing that may be, you know, the Vietnam War or something completely, totally different that you now allow to fill, you know, for yourself with as an artist. So,
yeah. So this is what I love. I love to ask everybody that's in an actor and an actress that has been in the field this question, because I get so many crazy answers and so many cool answers, and I just love it. Have you had the chance to play the role of a lifetime for you, whether that be a character, whether that be in a movie or whatever it is? And if you haven't, what is that role or what is that movie that you'd like to be in?
Oh man, that's a good one. So I haven't yet. I have a couple of them. One of them is I want to do a Western, like a Dreamland Western.
Nice.
Would be absolutely incredible to me. Absolutely incredible to me. But I have this long-term vision, and I have one of my favorite books is Moby Dick. It sits in the bed next to it sits on the stand next to my bed, and I have this far-reaching dream, probably 15, 20 years from now, to play Ahab from Moby Dick with the beard and the ship, and I've probably read it like 5 times. And to me, that would be the most incredible and challenging role. It was just that is absolutely, so it's one of those like long-term dreams, but it always sits there. It always looks at me. I pick it up and read stuff and then think about it. And so yeah, that's something that I would, I would love to do something like that.
Well, that's a great book and a great character, too. Now, would you play Ahab as some type of crazy individual, or would you play him very stern and, you know, just really to the point? Because it could literally go both ways, depending on your interpretation of the book.
Absolutely. You know, his fire and his crazy is on the inside. You know, one of the things about him that is so, I think, mesmerizing is his ability to make other people follow him kind of into hell. To do things that nobody would ever do because of his passion and his drive and his dedication. So it's his internal storm, the palpable feeling you get that's inside of him, yet he's able to keep his body completely focused and driven and in line. So I would do my best to create that fire on the inside, to create that absolute chaos on the inside, so it only comes out in peeps and in the eyes and, you know.
That's the fun stuff. That's the fun stuff right there. And what a fun character that would be to play, I can only imagine. I never really thought about that one, and that would be a great movie to watch, actually. I think it would be intense, especially if they had some really cool, you know, supersized whale or something like that, you know, that he goes after. And, you know, with all the CG effects, that could be a fantastic movie.
Yeah, right? I feel like that'd be awesome.
It would have to have the dark side to it.
It can't be done. It has to be what?
It'd have to have a darkness to it. You know, like, it's always dark and rainy and gloomy outside of it. I think that would add a little bit of, you know, flair to it. Maybe like a couple of hurricanes or something like that coming up or whatever, just to add the
intensity. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It could be really, really cool with what we could do now. So I'm guessing it'll probably be done before that time. But, just thinking about it is pretty exciting.
So before we get into some of the stuff that you've done, what's your idea of success and in this industry, and have you reached that yet? Because some people have reached it pretty early, depending on what they and how they interpret it. Some people will probably never reach it until the day they retire. So what's your idea of success as an actor?
So for me, I guess I kind of have this saying that I go by. Success is finding what it is you're willing to die for and then living for it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's not a state of something that I'll reach. I think it's the process of going towards that thing that you're willing to die for, and or being with the person you're willing to die for, whatever that is. But finding those things that activate you so much as a person, as a human, and then living for those things, to me, it is success. And I think I'm on that path. I'm living it as we speak. The ups and downs. I think I have a pretty good ability to be able to, or maybe I've trained myself to be able to see, even in the down times or even the times when you're really, you know, going through it, to see it as a part of, you know, what I want and what I'm going after. So in that, I feel like I'm living my success, you know? And I think that's open to anybody's interpretation of what they think it is. But for me, yeah, I think it's the process of going after what you want.
Well, that's powerful, and that's a great way to start in these new the new segment of this thing here, where we're going to be talking about some of the stuff that you've done and what you've got coming up. So tell me a little bit about the movie that you were in, Dreamland, and also Ruby Ridge Standoff.
So Dreamland was a Lucky Chap film with Margot Robbie. It was directed by Miles Joris. I can't remember how to say it. Parafeet, I think. And It was incredible, absolutely incredible. I got to go out there and meet Margot, and she kind of has a crew that she's with, and they immediately just like accepted me, brought me in. It was really, really cool to see, because I think sometimes you have this opinion of how people will be before you meet them and what it's like. And then it's just, I've been blessed to work with so many. And not so many, but the actors and actresses that I've worked with have been so incredible that it's been great. So getting to go and shoot that was absolutely a blast. I, you know, one of the books I'd read a long time ago was, what was the name of it? It was a book about the Dust Bowl. And it was incredibly enlightening. I read it about 8 years ago. So getting to do this movie, which takes place during the Dust Bowl in the Panhandle and Texas, and there's places that were completely destroyed by, you know, the way we farmed and then exploited the land, sold it to all these people who thought it was going to be green and beautiful. They buy the land, move out here, and to find out that it was just, the plains were just completely desolate. So for me, it was just absolutely thrilling, man. Absolutely thrilling. And then it's like, you get on and you do these things and you don't know what's going to happen, and it's super windy or whatever happens. And it's really incredible, because you work so hard in kind of leading up to do it. And then you get there and you realize you're just playing. You're doing what you've practiced so long. It just feels effortless or easy once you're there, compared to all the thought and the work that's gone into preparing for you to be there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what are some of the things you have coming up now that you have maybe in the works that you can talk about, obviously?
Yeah. So I think one of the things that's coming out is I just shot Midnight Texas.
Okay.
And that's coming out in, I believe November 2nd. I think November 2nd is going to come out. That was a lot of fun. I got to, it was a twisted role, really twisted role. I don't know how much I can talk about the role, but it was a lot of fun. Pretty dark. I have a feeling it's gonna get me some other dark roles. It's funny because you a lot of times people don't book you until they've seen you do something, and then it's like, oh, wait a second, you can do this, or they can do this, so. But that was a lot of fun, getting to work with that whole crew. They were so nice, and So, and then I write too. So I'm working on a script that I'm working on about dreams and night terrors, and about halfway through that one. So I work on that, and then, you know, it's just the process of reading, auditioning, going out, flying, meeting people. I mean, I'm in it right now.
Wow. So you really are living your dream, and you're having fun doing it, and you're getting some really cool stuff out there. And you're getting the roles that I think I would love to play, and even that writing about night terrors and stuff like that. That's what my art's about anyways. It's about nightmares and crazy things and dark stuff. And, you know, people don't always understand it, but the ones that do, it hits them like it hits them right between the eyes, and they completely get it. And I love that. So, you know, if we met up somewhere, we'd probably be really good friends right off the bat.
Yeah, man. Well, I completely agree with that. It is actually a quote from Moby Dick. It's a man can never be truly warm unless a part of him is cold.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's exactly what that means. Is that there's a certain in what we do, being able to venture into these dark sides of humanity and these dark things, there's an element that is very revealing of our culture, of everybody, of what we are, why we've gotten to where we are. And a lot of times what we pretend to not know or to cover up, you know. And so for us, it's our job to kind of to dig into that and to expose it and to reveal it and to you know, show that truth.
Yeah,
because it is a side of humanity. So for me, those are a lot of fun to do. I do enjoy doing that and getting into that kind of stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have blown through the time already, and I cannot believe we're this late already, because I wanted to talk to you about some of your skateboarding stuff, too. I've tried that and never, never made it happen for myself, but that's something we can definitely talk about next time. So before we go, please tell everybody how they can find you, follow you on any social media networks, or if you have any websites that you want to promote, and anything else you want to shout out to that people should be on the lookout for, go ahead and do it.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much. Yeah, you can just follow me at Hans Christopher on Instagram, on, you know, leave me a message, say what's up. Love to hear from you. That's kind of the platform that I use the most. So you kind of see what I'm going through, what my day-to-day is, and yeah, that's about it.
Well, Hans, thank you for coming on. This has been so much fun. I definitely got to get you back on to talk about more stuff in the future here, and we got a lot of stuff that we can cover, and I hope that we'll be able to get you on for this next movie that you have coming out. So congratulations to that, and congratulations on the success that you've had so far. We wish you all the best.
I appreciate that, Jason. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We will be right back, I promise, after this. Don't go anywhere.
Jason Dowd of Imagination Art Studios is proud to announce the release of his steampunk collection, which is currently on tour across the country. There you will see beautiful handmade masks from Venice, Italy, that accentuate beautiful women to create amazing stories and feelings to those who visit the collection. Each photo series has a theme, mask, authentic props, and beautifully elaborate outfits, all collaborated in the mind of Jason Dowd to create the right emotion and feeling. The masks come from a shop at Epcot at the Italian Pavilion, where all these photos are on display for you to see. This is one of the biggest accomplishments of his career, having his work at Disney. Come see the beautiful first release of the series, which includes Distressed Dancer, Spanish Serenade, The Pied Piper, and Reaching for the Czars. You can see them in person or online at www.imaginationartstudios.com. For more information, visit the website. Again, it's imaginationartstudios.com. Our Facebook is Imagination Art Studios. Twitter is @DowStudios. And Instagram is @JasonDow. Come and be mesmerized by the masks and the stories behind them.
Hi, this is Serena Palmer from Radio Rebel, and you're listening to the AME Radio Show.
All right, guys, we are back. I hope you had a great time with our guest today, and I hope you had fun listening to Cyndi Lauper and learning a little bit about that background behind that. But we are all out for today. We'll be back again next week, and you can find us on AM/FM 247 every Friday morning at 6 a.m. and every Saturday night at 5 p.m. You can find us on WKLAP every Friday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Radio Love every night Saturday at 9 p.m. You can also find us on Phoenix Broadcasting, iHeart, iTunes, and Spotify. That's all we got for you. Keep those creative juices flowing. We'll see you again next week. Good night, everybody.
That's the end?
We're done. Calm down, people. Calm down. Okay? That's it.